Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And in our last episode, we discussed the ghosts of evolution. We gave you what was probably a very sobering episode about the state of the world, the state of the ecosystem, and humanity's role in degrading it, and the forecast for the future, which is not all that great.
Yeah, we talked about picking apart the web of life and what happens and how it unravels and affects humans and other species and other flora around the world. So we're talking about trying to weave that web of life back together in this episode, specifically with something called rewilding. And the reason why it's so important is because we have definitely squarely entered into something called the Anthropocene.
Yes. This is, of course, the age of man. And this is, we did a whole episode on this, which you can certainly go back to and find a link to on the landing page for this podcast episode. But this is the idea that in the past, vast changes in the world have been caused by, you know, changes in global climate, ecological changes. But, in this age of man, we see the world being changed by humanity.
Yeah, it is the first time a species has become a greater force than the elements of nature. And just to call back to the episode real quick, we're talking about the Holocene period, previous to us, ending about 200 years ago with the steam engine. And this is according to Ken Caldera, who is a climate scientist at the Carnegie Institute of Science in California. Data retrieved from glacial ice cores show the beginning of a growth in the atmospheric concentrations of several greenhouse gases, in particular CO2 and CH4, which coincide with the invention of the steam engine in 1784. We can look at these ice cores and be like, oh, hey, that's evidence right there that this is when it began. And there's plenty of other evidence that there's all sorts of man-made strata out there. But this is a good example of how humans are shaping the course of the Earth.
Yeah, I mean, agriculture is another huge area, right? You go back 12,000 years in history, You see the rise of agriculture. We stopped being hunter-gatherers. We stopped, going out here to get our plants and going over here to try and catch or hunt an animal. We said, hey, we can grow the crops right here. Mm-hmm. And to do that, we have to change the environment. We have to take what was once a field, what was once a forest, which was once a bunch of shrubs, and turn it into a one crop environment that is tightly controlled by the humans that have made it.
And then eventually just pave over that.
Yeah.
Right. And build something on top of it. So the idea here is, can we reverse the course of our actions, and can we do this through something called rewilding, which we'll get to in a moment. But before, we should talk about human rewilding.
You know, in looking at this topic and the previous one, I keep thinking back to Daniel Quinn's 1992 book, Ishmael, which I know a number of our listeners have probably read. The basic sell on the book, of course, is a man talks to a talking gorilla, but it's a deep ecological, philosophical work about where we are and where we're going, and indeed, if we can do anything to stop what we've done. Just to read a quick quote from it. Man's destiny was to conquer and rule the world, and this is what he's done, almost. He hasn't quite made it, and it looks as though this may be his undoing. The problem is that man's conquest of the world has itself devastated the world. And in spite of all the mastery we've obtained, we don't have enough mastery to stop devastating the world or to repair the devastation we've already wrought. There's a part in the book where Ishmael describes human culture and the rise of technology as this pilot in an airplane that's mm-hmm. been pushed off of, like this, sort of like the experimental aircraft of old. You know, mm-hmm. you've all seen the footage. They push it off the top of a building, off the side of a cliff, mm-hmm. and it ultimately is just plummeting. But inside the aircraft, the individual is, pumping hard at the controls, pedaling the pedals as fast as they can, even though it's falling. It's falling, and it's just falling, faster and faster. But we keep doing all the things that we're doing. We keep trying to pilot this aircraft that simply is not going to fly. It's not going to prevent us from crashing into the ground. So in this podcast, we're asking that question, can we stop the plane from crashing the ground? What are some of the things we can do to avoid devastation?
First, we have to get out of the plane.
Yes.
Yeah, that's clear right there, right? It's not working for us. And that's really what we're talking about. Like that some of what we're doing, particularly from a technological angle, is not working for us. And how do we get back to a solution that does work for us? Well, rewilding in nature is certainly a solution, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But before we talk about rewilding in nature, you gotta talk about rewilding humans, because that's where it begins.
Yes. And, as with a lot of things rewilding, the term already has various definitions, and it can already be sort of taken to mean one thing or another. In this sense, human rewilding, though, is on one level, it's about reconnecting with nature. It's about integrating. It's about combining time in nature with conscious living. It's not necessarily about just completely abandoning your life. It's because it easily brings to mind, the idea of someone quitting their job, throwing their smartphone into the ocean, and then trekking off into the woods to eat, berries and field mice all day. But it's about integration. It's about saying, all right, what are some aspects of my life that I can bring back to nature? Places in my life where I can reconnect with nature and reconnect with the survival skills that I originally had. I've also seen it described in terms of modern humans as being domesticated. We're the house cats that have been in the house so long that if we're suddenly outside in the backyard, we're going to die within an hour because we don't know how to survive anymore. We've gotten away from our roots.
Well, I mean, much of that is true because if you had to go out and survive on your own in a forest, it would be very difficult today, right? Unless someone had passed down the skills to you, or you had paid to get those skills,
right?
Like through Rewild Portland, actually, which offers a 6-month long rewilding immersion program. You, for the low cost of $5,000, you could learn every sort of do it yourself thing from metal smithing to hunting wild game and foraging skills. And foraging skills, I think, are hugely important, something that we overlook, because for millennia, ancestors have been foraging for food, and that's how they largely subsisted. We tend to think about you know, this sort of paleo diet where it's, you know, a bunch of meat, hunks of meat. But the truth of the matter is that we subsisted on vegetation. So we've talked about this before. We've talked about foraging and even entomophagy, eating bugs as ways to subsist, and ways that actually would have less of an impact on environments and ecosystems. So the whole human rewilding thing is hearkening back to a simpler time and less of, a reliance on technology.
Yeah, and it's easy to get get caught up in the language of it too, because, you know, we're saying things like reconnect with nature and your past, and just the mere fact that it sounds like the pitch for an ongoing skit in the next season of Portlandia, you know, it's easy to just sort of dismiss some of the silliness of it. But it is at heart about reconnecting with what it is to be human, of sort of relearning how to be a human organism. And a lot of this is stuff that we do feel a craving towards, like the hunter-gatherer thing. Most of us don't do any kind of hunting and gathering, but I wonder to what extent we end up scratching that itch when we say get coupon crazy and we're looking for deals. Like we're sort of trying to recapture the hunter-gatherer. Or certainly, I mean, I grew up in rural Tennessee, and there are plenty of hunters in that area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in large part, I feel a lot of that comes from a culture of, you know, you're reconnecting with your past. You know, it's this part of your heritage, hunting for meat. And even though you're not depending upon that deer meat to feed your family as much anymore, you feel a pull to the past. You feel like this is a part of what you are as a being, as an organism, and therefore you engage in it.
You know, I was recently in Taos, New Mexico, and I visited the Taos Pueblo settlement, which is one of the oldest Native American settlements in the United States. And one of the things that one of the Taos members was talking about is growing up in that village, which still practices the same sort of rituals and day-to-day operations as they did 1,000 years ago. And there's no running water or electricity there. And so she said that as a child, she would run around, she would go and get the water, she would bring it home, she would be taught by the other children how to fish with her hands, right? Mm-hmm. And they also played up in the mountains. She said that was her backyard, and they respected nature, and they understood how to communicate with nature. So she said mountain lions weren't a problem. They weren't getting eaten by mountain lions because they were so much more in tuned and had the information passed down on how to deal with, you know, these species around them and how to cultivate the flora around them. And I thought it was such an amazing place to visit, to see that people were still, I suppose you would say, human rewilding, although all they were doing is just following their ancestors' way of living.
As with a lot of human endeavors, it's one of those areas where we end up complicating things several times over, because you see the mix of ecological responsibility here, mm-hmm. the idea that if we all behave just a little more in tune with the environment, then our individual footprint is less, mm-hmm. and our overall environmental footprint is less, and it can all roll down to positive change. But then on the other hand, a lot of this is caught up in heritage and culture and wanting to reconnect with our past.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that is that the flower, I believe is her name, who led the tour, was saying that for 70 years, Taos Pueblo settlement had an ongoing lawsuit with the government to reclaim lands, including Blue Lake, which is nearby. And they were saying that because the government had taken over national park land and they were giving it to commercial entities, that a lot of their drinking water began to get tainted. And as a result, they began to see their environment change. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today, this impact, mm-hmm. this web of life. That you just change one little thing and there's a cascade of events that follow. So this to me was such a good example of, here's this group in place and little do we know here in the United States, but they're affecting change for the Clean Water Act, right? And Clean Air Act in the 1970s. A lot of that was the movement from Native American tribes saying we need to respect the land and act with it.
Yeah, even though rewilding is a relatively new term, it's already kind of a big tent. But just bear in mind when thinking about it that it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go live off the grid in the woods. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to, you know, build a bunker and prepare for the apocalypse and for, you know, to hunt and gather amid the shattered ruins of human civilization or anything like that. It can be as simple as reminding yourself that nature exists, taking the time to, and again, it's so easy to fall in the trap of making it just sound like hippie feel goodery mm-hmm. to some listeners, but just to reconnect with nature and to realize that you are a biological organism and you are a part of this ecology and you do not stand outside of it, no matter how unnatural the environments are that we've built for ourselves and the structures that we depend on, both informational and physical. It can be just as simple as thinking about your choices a little more and making those choices a little more in step with the natural world.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about choices when you really think about it. And perhaps even installing a Komodo dragon in your backyard. We'll talk about that idea when we get back from this break.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
All right, we're back. We've been talking about rewilding in the human sense, in the idea of undomesticating ourselves, about reconnecting with nature, and making better choices in our lives. All the things that kind of fall under the semi-ambiguous term of human rewilding.
Yeah. And now we're going to talk about rewilding nature, which is a huge topic. So we could talk about all the various projects going on with rewilding, but we chose to really focus on something that George Monbiot talked about in his TED Talk, and we're talking about rewilding with wolves. But before you can talk about rewilding with wolves, you have to talk about how there was a mass extermination effort of wolves over a very long period of time, at least in the United States.
Yeah, and it's a rather involved and fascinating topic when you get into it, because there's several different layers to it. I mean, there's the basic human fear of wolves, mm-hmm. which is generally unfounded. This is not a species that preys on humans. I feel like we've discussed this in the past. The wolf it's easy to build the wolf up in your mind as this thing that it is not. And so part of it is the fear of the wolf.
Right.
Part of it also has to do with the ways that we were already changing the world and altering the environment and therefore altering the behavior of the wolves. You know, suddenly we're trying to keep a whole bunch of prey animals out here unmolested from, you know, basically trying to set these sheep or whatever apart mm-hmm. from the rest of the natural world. And then you get upset when the wolves come to eat the sheep.
Right. So, I mean, there's part of this is agriculture, part of this is folktale. In fact, we even talked about, I think it was in New Mexico, there was a bus stop that was a caged bus stop
yes.
for children.
Because the ridiculous fear that the wolves were just out there ready to eat American children.
Yeah, there was a group that installed these because they were against the protection of these subspecies of the gray wolf, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the fact that before Europeans settled in the United States, there were 250,000 wolves roaming the country. And then you look at the fact that by the 1970s, only a few hundred wolves remained in the lower 48 states. You get that that wolves had been hunted and exterminated to quite a degree.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about putting out poison traps for them, putting out physical traps. Often they would put out two physical traps so mm-hmm. that they wouldn't just catch them with one paw, they'd catch them with two. Therefore, you know, trying to ensure that this animal would be captured and killed rather than just escaping or injured.
Now, the effects of that can be in something called the trophic cascade, which is an ecological process which starts at the top of the food chain and tumbles all the way down to the bottom. And nothing illustrates this better than wolves, as told by George Monbiot during his TED Talk on rewilding. Because he says that after 70 years of wolves being absent in Yellowstone, when they were reintroduced,
1995,
there was a huge effect, okay? And the reason that they were reintroduced is that the numbers of deer had just escalated and went crazy. And because there was nothing to hunt them, they had reduced the vegetation to nil. They were just grazing all over the place. So they thought, well, let's just bring in a couple wolves, knock down the population of deer, and that'll help things, right? But really, it was this whole wilderness that seemed to have sprung from the reintroduction of these wolves.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive because, again, you expected the wolves to kill the deer. It was just, you know, a situation of, oh, well, the bath water is a little too hot. Let's add a little cold water and that'll balance it out. But as we've made clear in our previous episode, nature is more complicated than that. There's far much more going on. It's not just hot water and cold water. What else happened? We see the deer starting to avoid the valleys and gorges where they could be easily killed by the wolves. So suddenly these areas are deer free. And so since the deer are no longer there to munch everything down to the mm-hmm. ground, stuff starts growing up again. And so very quickly you see these, what had previously been, you know, bare valleys are growing up into forests again.
Yeah. Monbiot says that the height of trees quintupled in just 6 years. And that you had forests of aspen and willow and cottonwood. And then as soon as that happened, all of a sudden there was a whole neighborhood of birds that moved in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the number of beavers started to increase because beavers like to eat trees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And beavers, like wolves, are ecosystem engineers. We talked about that in our last episode about these keystone species affecting an oversized change in their environment.
Yeah, so they're building the rivers, they're providing habitats for otters and muskrats and ducks and fish and reptiles and amphibians, and they're moving in. And then also, you see that the wolves are not only eating the deer, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're also preying on coyotes.
And then, because of that, the number of rabbits and mice, they begin to rise because they're not being killed off by coyotes,
mm-hmm.
which meant more hawks, more weasels, more foxes, more badgers. Ravens and bald eagles came down to feed on the carrion that the wolves had left behind. Then bears, they got in on the game too.
In large part because there's more shrubs growing, more berries. I mean, they want to hunt and gather, and now there's more to hunt and gather from.
But now, this is the thing. That's not even the craziest of changes. The fact that all these animals sprung up once the wolf was reintroduced. The crazy thing is that the behavior of the rivers, the actual landscape, begins to change.
Yeah, indeed, because suddenly you're seeing, it means changing the traffic alongside the river. You know, what's walking around there? It's changing what's growing around the river. Mm-hmm. And as the vegetation changes, it's affecting the stability of the waterways.
There's less erosion.
Less erosion. Yeah, it's actually changing the earth.
Yeah, and it's regenerating forests, which are stabilizing the banks so that the banks don't collapse as often as well. And then they become more fixed, they meander less. And so really what you have is this more stabilized Eden kind of moving in.
Yeah. Now, of course, it's worth noting that there still is a golf course in Yellowstone Park. I don't want anyone to forget that when thinking about the nature reclaiming this beautiful park. And it is a beautiful park. I've been there and it's fabulous, but there's still very much a human footprint there. But this really does just how the reintroduction of this one species. It's like we as humans have this tendency. We don't realize the value of things until they're gone. And this is kind of an example of that. And by putting something back, we begin to see just how important it was to begin with. And I love how this should be a children's story because it has that kind of roll to it. You put one thing back and then this comes back and this comes back. It's kind of like a more positive version of Thidwick the Big-Hearted Moose with all of these, with the cascading effect.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the reversal of the domino effect.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see it unfold like this. Now, Mombiot also brings up an example of whales, not necessarily rewilding them, but understanding that whales provide an entire ecosystem unto themselves as well, and are a good example, again, of what happens when you disrupt a species. And the Japanese government, he says, had rationalized killing whales for a long time because they thought, hey, the number of krill and fish will rise if you remove the main predator, right?
Which is, again, a very hot water, cold water understanding of how nature works. It's far more complicated than
that. It's far more complicated, and it's really reliant on poop, it turns out, specifically whale poop in the oceans, because, as Mombiot says, they produce what biologists politely call large fecal plumes. When they come to the surface, these are huge explosions of poop right across the surface, up in the photic zone where there's enough light to allow photosynthesis to take place. And then those big plumes of poo are basically fertilizing or stimulating the growth of phytoplankton. And the plant plankton at the bottom of the food chain is stimulating the growth of zooplankton, which feeds the fish and the krill and all the rest of it.
Yeah, which ends up producing more and more sea life for humans to eat. So without taking them away, without reducing their numbers, you are already getting the same results you're trying to achieve by their removal.
Yeah, if you remove them, you're actually reducing the amount of fish and krill, which, to be fair, it does sound counterintuitive, right? You would think you'd take the predator away and you'd have more of the thing. But the predator poop is actually the life force for the thing.
Yeah, I mean,
you can quote me on that.
So this raises the question then, is it this simple? Could this be done in various environments around the world? Could we just simply reintroduce a missing keystone creature, a missing predator, and therefore make the difference? Like, I can't help but think of where my mom lives out in rural Tennessee.
Right.
Deer everywhere. It's just lousy with deer. You can hardly drive down the road without almost hitting one. You look out the window and there are like six out there looking through at you because there's nothing to eat them. Even the human hunters who are, you know, doing all they can, they still can't kill enough to keep the numbers down.
Yeah. In a national park setting, I feel like this is a more straightforward proposition. But George Mombiot says, hey, let's just go crazy with paleoecology, which is the study of past ecosystems. He says, why not reintroduce some of our lost megafauna, or at least species closely related to those which have become extinct everywhere? Why shouldn't all of us have a Serengeti on our doorsteps?
And this is where he gets into at times controversial areas. Certainly areas where there are plenty of people who disagree with him. Because on one level, you can say, yes, let's reintroduce species that were lost to this particular area.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, you can make those efforts, as we'll discuss. There are some ongoing rewilding efforts to do just that.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, so before we get into some more of the wilder animals or extinct animals, let's talk about Komodo dragons, because there are proponents of rewilding that argue that Komodo dragons may fill the gap in Australia's ecosystem left by Megalania, which was a giant lizard-like species that disappeared thousands of years ago. And this was a keystone species, like the wolf. And
right.
So their idea is that a bunch of roaming Komodo dragons could restore important ecological functions, like controlling the population size of native and introduced herbivores. So if you have a bunch of herbivores that are just going to town on the vegetation, you don't have enough vegetation there, and that's creating that trophic cascading effect in a negative way, maybe you bring back the Komodo dragon is the idea.
Yeah, it's kind of like in an office environment. You have that employee that leaves, and you suddenly realize, whoa, they really played an important role here.
Right.
We can't get them back, but maybe we can get something else like them, such as a Komodo dragon in the office place.
Right. And then there are some other ideas that I guess you could say are a bit more along the woolly mammoth bring back wagon.
Yeah, and really sort of going more into the way back machine in terms of humanity's impact on the environment,
mm-hmm.
and saying, well, hey, we used to have megafauna everywhere. We used to have not just elephants in Africa and in Asia, but we had large pachyderms in Europe, in North America. So what can we do there? We can't bring those creatures back. As romantic as that idea is, and
mm-hmm.
as fascinating as the possible science of it is, it's not feasible for the immediate future. So can we just take African or Asian elephants and introduce them into modern-day Europe, into North America and have them fill this long lost role to revitalize the environment.
Now, of course, this would require that we set aside land or even reclaim land to do it. Mm-hmm. So that would certainly be one of the things that comes up in terms of logistics and criticism.
And there often also are critics that say this would be a monumental effort and you're better off focusing on restoring the existing environment and, mm-hmm. and helping to maintain actual species that live in
yeah.
the environment. And if you're worried about because the other side of it is that this would also help out African and Asian elephants. And the critics would argue, well, helping out African and Asian elephants, if you're going to do that, those efforts are best restricted to Africa and Asia, mm-hmm. where they naturally live.
Right. So, yeah, there's all sorts of logistical problems here. We're talking about transporting the animals, mm-hmm. talking about exotic diseases. And then, as you had kind of already alluded to, a poor track record of introducing or even keeping species that we already have. So the idea is that you start rewilding and you take away the attention from the species that are already going extinct and need help. And instead, you're spending all your money and your attention on these different parts and different species.
Yeah. You know, but it's also worth pointing out that Monbiot's TED Talk is a TED Talk. And TED Talks are generally, it's you can think of them in terms of a lighted beacon on the top of the hill mm-hmm. with the understanding that humans are not actually going to follow that beacon to the top of the hill. They're going to maybe climb it
right.
halfway. And if they
right.
climb it halfway, that's great. Just by seeing the beacon there, it gives us a frame of reference.
And yet we need that beacon, right? Because we
yeah.
know that that is an example of something that can be done. And in fact, in her book, Rewilding the World, Caroline Fraser lists 21 rewilding sites throughout the world in which habitats are intentionally being rewilded and species are reintroduced. And again, let's think about that wolf example again. You know, that's the best case scenario,
mm-hmm.
In this sort of closed system already, but you see a huge positive effect. So perhaps these projects can bring about the same sort of change, sea change, really. And there are also a couple other rewilding projects of note, and you can definitely check these out more if you want to find out more. Rewilding Europe and Rewilding Siberia.
Yeah, the Siberia one I found particularly interesting because they're dealing in part with reintroducing wild horses, which they say could possibly save us from the effects of global climate change. They say that in the winter, the animals trample and flatten the snow that would otherwise insulate the ground from cold air. And so that helps prevent the frozen ground or permafrost from thawing and releasing powerful greenhouse gases. So, and again, you see that cascading effect, right? I mean, just to hammer the nail home again, I mean, over millions and millions and millions of years, life on Earth evolves into a system that works. Events occur and it has to, the settings have to adjust, but mm-hmm. then it finds its level again. But then humans come along and just start messing with all the settings, turning all the dials around. So rewilding in a large sense is about saying, hey, what were the factory settings before humans came along? And even though we can't go back to all of those factory settings,
right.
there are things we can do. There are things we can say, well, as humans, as a culture, we don't really need this. Maybe we can stop doing this. We can take this away. Or here's something that we took away without any reason at all. Why did we take all the wolves away? What if we give them back? And everybody and everything can reap the positive benefits of that reintroduction.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way it's reframing our role in the Anthropocene. If we
yeah.
know this is the age of man and we know that we're now creating this strata of man-made materials, then that should be empowering enough to say that we could do something as simple as this, which is to turn back the clock a bit and to reclaim some of these lands and see these trophic cascadings in effect. And David Biello, writing for Scientific American, I think had a really good thought about this. He said, quote, "In the end, wilderness is a state of mind. The natural world can only persist now as a deliberate act of human will. That will require firm human purpose as a gesture of humility, yes, but also a form of self-protection." In other words, we don't really have a choice in the matter.
Yeah, the airplane is plummeting. It's not flying. At some point, you have to realize we need to stop pedaling and figure out something else that works. And there's never a better time than now.
Indeed.
All right, so there you have it. As always, be sure to check out the landing page for this podcast episode. You'll find that at stufftoblowyourmind.com. We'll include links out to some of the stuff that we've talked about here, including that TED Talk, which you'll probably want to check out as well. And the homepage includes all of our blog posts, all of our podcast episodes, all of our videos, anything and everything Stuff to Blow Your Mind, you will find right there.
And what are your thoughts on this? Do you think rewilding could work? Do you think it could work in just certain areas of the world? Let us know, and you can send your thoughts to blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.